This is our number
10. It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Another tough day on Wall Street. Dow down 350 points almost, below 30,000 once again. Gas prices have been rising steadily for a month. And the Biden administration, they say that they are doing anything they can to buy oil from OPEC plus nations. The plus is Russia. So they'll buy oil from the Middle East and from our mortal enemies in Russia and from the socialist nation of Venezuela. But they don't want the United States of America to produce oil. They don't want the jobs here. They don't want the oil production here. They don't want the independence that comes with it. So instead, we're at the mercy of the rest of the world. And that's what the stock market is saying. Inflation is getting turbocharged once again. We got gas routinely over $5 a gallon here, $6 a gallon in some places here in Washington. The inflation is going to keep taking off, and this is a continued disaster for the Biden administration and for the Democrats with the midterms approaching. And it's just a shame that so many Americans are losing their retirement savings and their 401ks and their IRAs. It's a shame that so many people can't save any money. 60% of Americans, as of this week now, say that they are living paycheck to paycheck because of the effects of inflation. It's a shame that so many people have to be financially devastated so that people will wake up to the insanity of whoever the puppet master is pulling the strings of a president who can't think for himself, Joe Biden. But we're seeing it in all aspects of the economy now. It's not going to get any better. And we'll see what kind of impact it has a month from now on Election Day. Okay, let's get to the fastest 15 here. A world of news. A tiny little 15-minute package just for you. You know, a bunch of people have been suggesting one idea in particular, Nicole. Because yesterday I was asking, I'm a little, when we put our show together, I want the most gigantic audience possible. So I asked listeners yesterday, 1 o'clock tomorrow, the Mariner game's on. You going to listen to us? Well, the ball game. A bunch of people said they're going to listen to the ball game because playoffs only happen once every 21 years. Here in Seattle.
Well, I mean, you can't blame them. We are available via podcast.
Did you see the one idea, though?
Not as crucial.
In fact, a bunch of listeners had the same idea. You know how on Monday Night Football, the game's on ESPN, but then on ESPN2, they have Peyton and Eli Manning watching the game, just making little nickel comments throughout the game. And a bunch of people said, why don't you just do that?
Well, I'm nervous about that because I actually thought it was a really good idea. It's like, yeah, we should, you know, do constant updates. We can describe things. That'd be really fun. Yeah. However, there are going to be people that are going to want to watch it when they get home. So are we going to ruin it for those people? I mean, I know how you are. If you're taping a game and you don't want it ruined, you can
know.
Be quite a butt about
it. If I'm recording Monday Night Football so I can watch it later, I don't turn on Peyton and Eli Manning during the game spoil it.
I'm saying that's the purpose of people listening to us, though, is, you know, they're going to miss that, but they'll listen to us and we'll just describe it, right?
Okay.
I don't know.
I
guess you can ask. That can be the today's question. Would you like us to give you updates or no updates?
I'm too competitive for that. I'm afraid if we give updates, people go, oh, yeah, the ball game's on, and then they get turned off. We'll just do our regular old show, and if that's good enough, then it's good enough.
Or maybe we'll just give updates, but we'll preface them with turn down real quick, and then turn back up.
I still wish we were doing a simulcast. We should be carrying the game on this channel so it could get through all the thick walls of warehouse workers and
exactly
all the people. Mm-hmm. That's what we should be doing, but that's the way it goes. All right, let's get into the fastest 15 here. So speaking of the world of sports, Marshawn Lynch, this is one of the most interesting sound bites I've ever heard him give. He was asked about his running style and why he was so effective, because he didn't just try to run around people and he didn't have the fancy moves. He just, he just ran through people. And so yesterday he was asked why that running style was so effective. And we have to stress here, this is not edited together, the soundbite. We didn't edit him so it sounded like he was saying the same word again and again and again. He said it exactly like you're about to hear it as he was talking about why his style of running through people was more effective than the elusive guys.
That's when it just clicked in my mind that if you just run through somebody's face, a lot of people...
Okay, just run through somebody's face. That's what he would do.
That's when it just clicked in my mind that if you just run through somebody's face, a lot of people ain't going to be able to take that over and 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 over again. They're just not going to want that.
Think there's a deeper metaphor there?
Run through a face. Then you don't have to worry about them no more.
Well, that's one way to put it.
That's a metaphor. The deeper metaphor.
Run through the M bleeping face. Okay. Speaking of the world of sports, Shaquille O'Neal, who seems like a really good, fun guy. Everybody that I know a couple people who know Shaq pretty well. And everybody tells me he's just a wonderful, wonderful guy, fun-loving. He had that soundbite a couple of years ago that pretty much most people of means have adopted when their kids say, "Why won't you buy me that? I mean, come on, Dad, we're rich." And Shaq's answer was, "We're not rich. I'm rich." And he always has kind of that just common sense speech about him. So here he is talking a bit more about respectable nepotism.
And I tell them, you know, they kind of got mad at this, but I say, in order to touch daddy's cheese, you got to have 3 degrees.
That's a lot of degrees.
Yeah, because I believe in respectable nepotism. Mm. You know, I was with the Miami Heat one day and an article came out. The grandmother leaves the son $250 million. Right? So I didn't think nothing of it because it's a rich family. So I go in the locker room one day to shoot, and this kid's on his knees scrubbing the bathroom floor. And I'm looking at him like, "Hey, man, didn't your grandmother just give you $250 million? "Yeah, but Dad wants me to start from the bottom." So he had to do that. He was picking up jocks, and he was, you know, he started in the marketing department, and now I think he's the vice president. Once I saw that, I was like, you know what? That right there is respectable nepotism. Because the kid went to Duke, his grandma gave him $250. He could have been like, "I'm not doing anything." But his dad said, "Nope, you start from the bottom." So that's what I also teach my kids. And I also have to teach them, we're not rich. I'm rich.
I love that. I love that line so much. Daddy, we're rich.
I like that. You want to touch daddy's cheese? You got to have 3 degrees. And you know, it's so true because there are spoiled little rich kids who inherit everything, who are born on third base with a silver spoon in their mouth, and they tend to be miserable human beings. But I also know a lot of people who were born into wealth, but they worked their butts off. They worked like they were born into poverty. And those are the people who not only have much more happy lives because they earn what they've got, they don't ever feel entitled, but they have more meaningful lives. I mean, if you've ever seen the, I think it's still on Instagram, the rich kids of Instagram. And these are, you know, oftentimes it's like the kids of Middle Eastern oil sheiks or, you know, whoever. But they're always posting pictures at age 17, 18, 19 of them walking onto a private jet or them sitting on an infinity pool somewhere in Greece. And you know that those are among the most miserable human beings. They might think they're happy, but they're empty inside. They're dead inside. People
or they
like
will
that.
Be. They might be having fun now, but in, you know, when their looks start to fade and their,
yeah,
you know, yeah, their friends go away, then yeah.
I'm glad that I developed a work ethic because once my looks started to fade,
I think man, it's been all over for me. It's a parenting thing. Kids that are told work hard and the world does not revolve around you. Those are the kids that do well in life. But it's the kids that are, you know, no Halloween because, you know, the minority doesn't celebrate it. Those are the kids that are told that the world revolves around them. And and it's just, yeah, they're spoiled brats. But you got to play. There's another cut in there from him about a story from his son.
This is about his son getting good grades.
You know my oldest son. He's very smart. And it was kind of my fault. I said, my man, if you get all A's this next semester, you can get whatever you want. Mm. So he gets all A's, and I was like, go to the dealership and pick one. Then I get a call from Tesla. I said, man, you better take your ass across the street to Honda.
Oh, man. And his kids are growing up with their heads screwed on straight, which is all we can ask his parents.
Oh, they're very successful. They do make their own money, though.
Oh, yeah. Now I got to move on to this next segment. I have a lot more to say about that, but we'll move on here. Joe Biden told another lie just yesterday. He was down in Florida trying to empathize with the hurricane victims. And he decided to tell them that he could really relate all of their homes and businesses being knocked over and devastated with the hurricane. He could really relate to it because something similar happened to him about 15 years ago.
But we know from experience, how much anxiety and fear and concern there are in the people. We didn't lose our whole home, but lightning struck and we lost an awful lot of it about 15 years ago. And we had a lot to go to. We had relatives nearby. It wasn't like everything was wiped out, but we know the feeling.
He didn't lose his whole home, but he lost an awful lot of it when lightning struck their home. And thankfully, they had relatives nearby. Almost every part of that is a lie. Because, yes, lightning hit his house and there was a small kitchen fire. According to the Associated Press, the kitchen fire was put out within a few minutes. They didn't have to move out with relatives. It wasn't an awful lot of the home that was destroyed. But this is a pattern. And this long predates the dementia. You know, like for years, he told the story, even when it was exposed as a lie. He kept talking about how he got arrested fighting with Nelson Mandela for human rights.
I had the great honor of meeting him. I had the great honor of being arrested with our UN ambassador trying to get to see him on Robben Island.
Yeah, he told the Mandela story over and over again.
I had the great honor of being arrested with our UN ambassador on the streets of Soweto trying to get to see him on Robben Island.
One of the most shameful guys I ever knew because I got arrested trying to see him when I went down to South Africa. Nelson Mandela.
I came back from South Africa trying to see Nelson Mandela and getting arrested for trying to see him on Robben Island. He was in prison.
Wow, he kept getting arrested trying to see Mandela. Right, Joe?
When I said arrested, I meant I was not able to move. Cops, Afrikaners, would not let me go with them, made me stay where I was. I guess I wasn't arrested, I was stopped.
Oh, he just told people arrested for years and years and years, but he had to fess up on CNN. Kind of like when he pinned that silver star on that selfless soldier.
This guy climbed down a ravine, carried this guy up on his back under fire. And the general wanted me to pin the silver star on him. I got up there and stand. This is God's truth. My word is a Biden. He stood his attention. I went to pin him. I said, sir, I don't want the damn thing. Do not pin it on me, sir. Please, sir, do not do that. He died.
Never happened. That story was exposed as a total lie. God's honest truth. My word is a Biden. Ooh, that's impressive. What about the Iran war? Or the Iraq war, I should say.
I made a mistake. I said it 14 years ago. I trusted George Bush to keep his word. He said he was not going to go into Iraq.
No, it was a mistake to go into Iraq. He didn't know that they were going to do that. What did he say at the time?
Only way we're going to get rid of Saddam Hussein. And it's going to require guys like you in uniform to be back on foot in the desert taking taking Saddam down.
Ooh, he almost said son of a, how edgy. That was all a lie. He says now he immediately opposed the war.
From the moment shock and awe started, from that moment, I was opposed to the effort and I was outspoken.
Really? What'd you say back then?
Some of my own party have said that it was a mistake to go to Iraq in the first place. But the cost of not acting against Saddam, I think, would have been much greater. The president of the United States is a bold leader, and he is popular.
Well, should we believe Joe now or Joe then? Because those are 180 degrees different. How about the civil rights movement?
When I marched in the civil rights movement, I marched with tens of thousands of others to change attitudes. We changed attitudes.
He marched in the civil rights movement with tens of thousands. Here's 1987, Joe.
I was not an activist. I was not out marching. I was not down in Selma. I was not anywhere else.
Well, at least he's got some credibility because he was a coal miner.
Hope you won't hold against me, but I am a hard coal miner. Anthracite coal.
Ooh, anthracite. Never happened. That was a lie. I'm sure this one's true.
Corn Pop was a bad dude. And he ran a bunch of bad boys. And he cut off a 6-foot length of chain. He folded up. He said, you walk out with that chain. And you walk to the car and say, you may cut me, man, but I'm going to wrap this chain around your head.
And then I popped a cap in his... Oh, never mind. Okay, finally. Truck driver Joe.
And if we don't do...
drive an 18-wheeler, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish...
Oh, yeah? That's
I
awesome.
Got to.
No, I never drove an 18-wheeler either, but that's okay. He's president of the United States. And that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes of the News. Fast Dory's Fastest 15.
We should raise some money to rebuild Joe's house that was burned down by the lightning strike. Let's do that next week. Okay, give us 15 minutes against the world. Brandi Cruz joins us next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Come to Jesus, you got
Thursday afternoon. That's when our friend Brandi Cruz comes by for her weekly visit. You can see her independent work at patreon.com/undivided. Good afternoon, Brandi.
Hello, top of the afternoon to you.
It is as well. I don't know what that means. So you talked yesterday with State Rep Jesse Johnson. I talked about this yesterday. He was the architect of some of the police reform bills that has made Washington the most criminal-friendly state in the country, in my view. And we're seeing that reflected in the murder rates in Seattle, Tacoma, Everett, Spokane, at 40-year highs, some of them setting all-time records. And he, on Twitter, said that the reason police are upset about his bills is because some police are upset they can't go around killing people. I know you asked him about that, but what did he say about the state legislators' contention that some cops just want to go around killing people?
When you say in one breath that you want to work with law enforcement on this issue, and then you're talking about how police are just mad they can't go around killing people, why would law enforcement take you as genuine or take you at your word that you want to have conversations with them in good faith?
Well, again, the quote I said was some police, and you know, what I found is it's a mix.
So to me, that's him standing by the, you know, the statement. I mean, he certainly isn't backing away from it in that soundbite. But, you know, like I told him, we had this wonderful, first of all, I'll say I enjoyed our conversation. It was about 40 minutes long. I appreciated him taking the time. Certainly he doesn't have to, right? He's not running for reelection. So there's no obligation for him to do media about this bill. And he knows that I disagree with it. But, you know, when he sit there and in one breath, like I said to him, talking about, you know, wanting to even come back to the table with law enforcement and work towards something that might be better, in the other breath, he's saying that some police are just mad because they can't go around killing people, as I expressed to him. I don't know why law enforcement would take you at your word or in good faith that you really want to have a conversation with them.
Well, here's the other question that I have, and I've had him on the show as well, but... there's no question now. And I said this when the bill was being voted on in Olympia more than a year and a half ago. So this is not Monday morning quarterbacking. I said this would make us the most criminal-friendly state in the country. And as I said, when you look at our murder rate as a state and in individual cities, that has happened. I don't think there's any doubt that we can connect his bill, statistically, we can connect his bill with record numbers of young black and brown people being murdered because of all the depolicing that's happening and all the car crashes that are happening. Does he feel any guilt over the havoc that he has created in our state?
Well, a couple things. To that point, I ended the interview by asking him about the fact that his community in Federal Way, so he represents Federal Way, while they were working on this police reform legislation in Olympia and prioritizing it above all else, his city had a record high homicide rate. And I said, you know, were you focusing on the wrong thing, or should you have been focusing on two things at once? And he acknowledged that, you know, they need to make more of an effort to deal with these violent crimes that particularly young men are perpetrating in his community. It was his contention that he had put forth some ideas before he was a state legislator that just weren't acted upon by officials at the time. But, you know, I asked him off the top of the interview, and again, if you want to watch the full interview, it's patreon.com/undivided. I asked him at the top of the interview if he believes there were unintended consequences to the police pursuit bill. And he said no. And so I followed up and said, well, you know, 1,000 people fleeing traffic stops from the state patrol in the first 5 months of the year. By now, it's much greater than that. Is that right. An intended consequence? Because if it's not an unintended, if there are no unintended consequences, then is that an intended consequence? And it's still his contention that he believes that, you know, it's an improvement in public safety. But one of the things I point out, I don't necessarily blame Jesse Johnson for this. You know, yes, you have the data in terms of how many officers are hurt in pursuits innocent civilians are hurt in pursuits, but there isn't any data or any tracking, and it might just be difficult to do so, to determine, okay, for every person that drives away, what do they go on to do? How many people do they go on to victimize? And I think that without those two data sets, there's no way that you can say with any certitude that the police pursuit bill has been a net positive for public safety.
No, and as I said, when you have a record number of murders and car crash deaths, almost every state in the United States is either flat or down in number of traffic fatalities, with the exception of Washington, where traffic fatalities are up 31% since his bill went into effect. And as I said, murders at an all-time high. So these are all directly connected to his bill. And I think he has to build up this wall, this veneer, because he realizes that his bill has led to the death of a lot of black and brown young men, the people that he was purporting to protect with it. And I think he's probably carrying around, if he has the ability to be introspective and analytical at all, he should be carrying around guilt for all of this. But I don't know if he is. I mean, I just don't get a sense that he is.
Well, and one thing that does really bother me, too, I listed for him all the cities that have now come out, not just, you know, I mean, across Western Washington, and of course, most of the cities on the east side feel the same way, Democrats, Republicans, nonpartisans who have come out and said, we need to fix this. And I listed it, and you know, it's kind of his contention that it's all politically motivated before an election. But as I pointed out to him, you know, Everett Mayor Kathy Franklin, who's a progressive Democrat. Yes, a year ago, she seemed to suggest that she was in favor of the pursuit bill, but clearly she has changed her mind and she sees what's happening in her community.
Yeah.
And I told him, you know, I don't see the political motivation there. She's not up for re-election until 2023. It does nothing for her political bona fides as a Democrat to come out on a video with Republicans in Snohomish County and speak out against this. And so I'm bothered by, I guess, just the dismissal of, you know, hundreds of elected officials and law enforcement who are concerned as being politically motivated, when I don't know that you can argue that in a lot of the instances. And for the Republicans who are speaking out about it, they've been speaking out about it since the very beginning. And so they haven't changed how they feel about it at all.
Agreed. And as well as cops. Cops were telling me before this went into effect how disastrous it was going to be, and they were right. Hey, in the world of media, a couple of days ago, Jonathan Cho, who, like you, used to work for a Seattle TV station, is now working more as an independent journalist, although he's at the Discovery Institute. He went to cover a Dow Constantine press conference about the homeless multiplex that King County wants down near the Chinatown International District. And Dow Constantine's henchmen would not allow Jonathan Cho in. They said, you're not a journalist. You got fired by Cuomo. And then when he tried to get some video through the fence, they pulled out the Antifa tactic and opened umbrellas to block Jonathan's camera. I've never seen anything like this, Brandy.
Never seen anything like it. I was in Wenatchee that day when that happened, and I was out there for a speaking event and I had my phone off most of the day. And then I got back to my hotel at night and turned it on, and a billion people had texted me, of course, at Pepperbly, but very close,
yes,
about this. And I went on Facebook Live and in fact, my voice hurt the next day because I was yelling so much on Facebook Live. Obviously, I have serious concerns about this. I reached out to, I love the word henchman, by the way. That's good. I'm going to steal that one. It's very, very appropriate. I reached out to one of the people you see in the video, who is a longtime spokesperson, not only for Dow Constantine, but prior to that, he was with Governor Inslee. It's someone who I've had a wonderful working relationship over the years with as a journalist, just to express to him my serious concern with it, my disappointment with it. And I also, you know, put out a call to the rest of the mainstream media that is just silent on this, saying, if you don't realize the slippery slope that this is creating in allowing politicians to not only determine who the journalists are, but to have five henchmen block a journalist's access to something, then you're fooling yourselves. You're fooling yourselves. And, you know, there's a million things that are disturbing about this. And I will say, if I'm playing devil's advocate, I will say, you do have to have some limits to who you allow into a press.
I agree.
Right? Because or else you're going to have every crazy person in the world in there just yelling at officials, and it's just not going to be productive for journalists who are trying to get information. But Jonathan Cho is on a fellowship to do journalism. He is putting out content. It's not as if he's just showing up there with his cell phone and yelling questions into the ether. He's putting out really good content, and I encouraged Dow Constantine's folks, go watch some of the stuff he's done, because it's journalism by any standard.
Right.
So anyway, I've had a conversation with Jonathan Cho and even told him, like, if it comes down to me having to pay him and put him on the payroll for Undivided to go out and cover these things, because they can't claim we're not a media organization. We pay taxes. We have subscribers. There are other outlets in the city that operate on the same subscription model. So if it comes down to having to do that, I will gladly do that so he can go and continue to do this work. But I also think it'll be a test for Dow Constantine's office. Do you really care about him having a journalism news outlet credential, or do you just not like the guy?
Well, and that's what they said. They said, well, we don't see any news organization on your name tag there. The problem with all of this is, you know, and like you said, I agree that you can't just let anybody with a phone go into every press conference and say that they're a journalist, because you'll get some whack jobs in there. But when it's somebody like you or Jonathan or Omari Salisbury or the woman who shall not be named, who thinks that you're Seattle's prettiest mean girl, you know, all these people who have a track record of covering stuff, I think that, of course, you need to let them in as media. That's why we have a First Amendment. And the other reality is, for the people in the Chinatown International District, they feel like they have no voice right now. Jonathan's been marching in the streets with them, chronicling their concerns. He has been an advocate for them when they felt like nobody in government would listen. And this is what Dow Constantine specifically wants to block out. I think it's outrageous.
Well, you know what we should do? We should just start calling Dow Constantine's office and his henchmen racist, right? Because if this was
Absolutely.
A Democrat or a Republican politician doing this to an Asian American journalist, people would say it's racist. So maybe we just use their tactics and just start calling them racists every time they treat Jonathan Cho like this.
There you go. I'll take that. You can use henchmen. I'll use racist. Look, that's a fair trade right there.
Right. I think so.
Okay. All right. You can see Brady's work, patreon.com/undivided. And you can see that whole interview with State Rep Jesse Johnson as well. It's good stuff. All right, Brandy, appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. See you. Brandy Cruz, patreon.com/undivided. Love to hear your thoughts on all of this. You can text us at 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. Lots more to come here in the Dory Monson Show. Coming up right after the top of the hour, a story you are not going to want to miss. But once again, how our mental health failure in our state, Jay Inslee has let mental health become an absolute disgrace, one of the worst in the nation, mental health systems. And it is now directly tied to the murders of two wonderful people. We will have the exclusive details for you coming up right after the top of the hour here on the Dory Monson Show. The Biden administration has made another absolutely despicable announcement. As you know, our kids are about 2 years behind educationally because of the long shutdown of schools during COVID. In our state, it's been particularly bad because the teachers' union, the WEA, they denied that there was any problem with kids missing 2 years of school, which makes me wonder, so why are we paying $20,000 per student per year if them missing 2 years of school has no effect on them? They've never been able to answer that. We also know about the mental health challenges that kids had when they were cut off from all of their friends and their activities. And now we have an update on all of this because the Biden administration has, some media members have just uncovered some emails from the Biden administration talking about how they want to leverage kids getting booster shots by threatening those kids with not being able to play school sports or do extracurricular activities. And this starting in Pennsylvania, where they are suggesting that all school districts host a school-based vaccine clinic. President Biden has called for every school district to have a vaccine clinic as school resumes. And they say that they want to start leveraging extracurriculars. Now, this is just pure evil is what we're talking about now, because no healthy child needs to be vaccinated. No healthy child needs to be boosted. In fact, according to the King County Department of Health data dashboard, children who are vaccinated and boosted have a higher risk of getting COVID than vaccinated with no booster. And yet the Biden administration is working with various states to threaten kids. And I'll read to you from this email. As we discussed on the call, we have seen leveraging athletics and extracurriculars as a way to boost youth vaccinations be an effective tactic across the country. Students want to avoid the risk of needing to quarantine for 14 days, and coaches and parents want to avoid this. Many districts have begun preseason practices, this was a couple weeks ago, and so would be good places to host clinics right now. So the Biden administration, completely bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical industry, that desperately wants to inject what is still an untested vaccine or therapeutic, whatever you want to call it. It's not much of a vaccine since you can still get COVID and you can still transmit COVID. Not much of a vaccine at all. But the pharmaceutical companies are still so desperate to keep hundreds of billions of dollars of revenue streaming in from governments around the world that they have bought off people like Joe Biden and Jay Inslee. And they are working to try to leverage taking away extracurriculars from kids unless they are fully vaxxed and boosted. This truly is evil that the school districts would even consider this. It's not surprising that corrupt politicians paid off by the pharmaceutical industry would try to figure out a way to do their bidding. But if there are school districts that are still thinking about, because King County Health just a couple of days ago said they're expecting a surge in COVID this winter because too many people are not getting boosted. If they're threatening kids with taking away their extracurriculars again, taking away their sports, then we truly are dealing not just with a bureaucracy, but with a deep, deep evil among us right now. A quick time out. We're going to check the news and then exclusive story about how Jay Inslee's mental health system is directly connected to the murders of two wonderful people. Exclusive details next here on the Dory Monson Show.